Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. The Trump administration plans to remove Sudan from state sponsor of terrorism list.
What we have achieved today through our continuous dialogue, where our experts continued to negotiate with the U.S. administration for more than a year, we managed to bring down these sanctions from $10 billion to a few hundred U.S. dollars.
And health workers are on strike in South Sudan.
We are angry because we have been working for almost 5 months without salaries. That is why we have to work off the jobs to protest so that our salaries are paid.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's transitional government has welcomed the announcement by U.S. President Donald Trump to lift Sudan from the list of state sponsors of terrorism once Sudan pays compensation to victims of terror attacks on U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. A Washington-based Sudanese political analyst calls the decision very significant and says he expects the process of delisting Sudan to proceed without problems. But victims of the 1998 terror attacks and their families are rejecting the $335 million U.S. dollar deal. For VOA News, Neville Biagio reports from Washington.
Michael Miller, one of the attorneys representing the more than 500 victims of the U.S. embassy bombing, said, "Most victims and their families have rejected the settlement Trump reached with Sudan." He says the $335 million deal discriminates between victims based on their nationality.
They're paying Americans far more than they're paying the loyal East African victims who worked for the American embassy. And I do not believe an American life is worth more than a fellow coworker who is in the next desk because one was born in Kenya and one was born in America. They're paying my Kenyan, or want to, they can't get away with it, they want to pay my East African employees 8% of what they're paying Americans. Now ask yourself, if those employees were in Paris or London, would they do that?
Miller says he and other lawyers will continue to fight in court until all their clients receive fair and equal compensation.
We have a judgment for over $5 billion that was given to us after 14 years of litigation by the federal district court in Washington, D.C. It was appealed all the way to the Supreme Court and affirmed. Supreme Court of the United States. And ironically, the Trump administration supported our effort in front of the Supreme Court. So the Trump administration can take Sudan off the terror list. That's their business. That's the business of the United States government. But they cannot stop us from enforcing our judgment.
Meanwhile, in Sudan, the Sovereign Council Chairman, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok both welcomed the announcement by the White House yesterday. President Trump tweeted that the new government of Sudan has agreed to pay $335 million to terror victims and their families. Once the payment is deposited, the tweet said, Trump will lift Sudan from the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list. The U.S. designated Sudan as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1993 because of Sudan's support to international terrorism and for hosting terrorists including Osama bin Laden. In a nationwide televised address last night, Hamdok called it a great deal and a well-deserved achievement for the Sudanese people.
What we have achieved today through our continuous dialogue, where our experts continued to negotiate with the U.S. administration for more than a year, we managed to bring down these sanctions from $10 billion to a few hundred U.S. dollars.
The prime minister said his government secured $335 million from gold exports and confirmed the money is in the process of being sent to the U.S. Suleiman Baldo is a senior policy analyst at the Century, a Washington-based organization that seeks to root out corruption in African governments. He says the settlement announcement is significant on several fronts, including Sudan's reputation.
Because of the unfairness of the labeling of Sudan as a state of terrorism, while the regime responsible for these acts has been deposed, toppled by peaceful pro-democracy protests in 2018-2019, for which the Sudanese have paid dearly. Second, Sudan, the new government, the transitional government has basically met a lot of conditions that the U.S. administration has required for this delisting, and they have met these conditions, and therefore it was only fair that, having responded to all the demands of the U.S., that the U.S. meets as part of the bargain.
Baldo says once the money is deposited, President Trump is expected to officially notify Congress, which in turn is expected to approve the settlement and pass legislation to restore Sudan's sovereign immunity against future litigation. Despite opposition to the deal from some U.S. lawmakers, including Democrat New York Senator Chuck Schumer and Democrat New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, he expects Congress to approve the settlement and confirm the delisting of Sudan as a state sponsor of terrorism.
We don't anticipate any problems because Congress was basically in agreement that this needed to be done, and it was actually ahead of the administration in agreeing on the language of the bill at the level of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee through a bill introduced by Senator Risch and Senator Coons, which received support from all the principals.
It is not clear when the money will be deposited, but Sudanese officials say the process will be complete within a matter of days. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still in Sudan, authorities in Kassala and Red Sea states of eastern Sudan say the death toll from last week's demonstrations has risen to more than 30 people. 50 others were also injured in the same protest. Kassala state officials have extended a curfew for another 48 hours to prevent further attacks by protesters. But Red Sea state governor Abdallah Shangarai lifted the curfew in Port Sudan and working towns. He also banned all forms of social gatherings. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
At a news conference held last night in Kassala town, state prosecutor Muhammad Ahmad said suspects who are supporters of Governor Saleh Amer and accused of inciting violence are being investigated before they appear in the court. He says 40 people were injured during the protest, including 24 civilians, 9 police officers, and 6 Sudan Armed Forces soldiers.
After the occurrence of the incidents, our office has issued an investigation process, post mental orders, and began investigating circumstances surrounding the incidents. Till now, we have collected some preliminary evidences which could be enough for charging the suspects.
Health officials in Kassala State say 16 other people who were injured in the protest are being treated at Kassala Hospital and are all listed in a stable condition. Ahmad is calling on the residents of Kassala town to cooperate with the investigative team to reach to all those who might have been involved in inciting the violence. He also called on citizens to abstain from all forms of violence. In Port Sudan of neighboring Red Sea state, eyewitnesses say 3 more people died in the hospital over the weekend, bringing the death toll there to 11. They say 31 others were injured. Kassala authorities extended the curfew in the town for another 48 hours on Sunday. They say the curfew will be lifted gradually as the situation improves. Taha Sheikh Al-Hassan, local journalist in Kassala town, said on Monday that tensions remain high between rival communities in Kassala and other parts of eastern Sudan. Al-Hassan said the extended curfew hours were expected to end this morning, but that the situation remained tense. Al-Hassan says security forces continue to surround vital institutions to prevent further attacks by protesters.
There is a heavy deployment around the town, especially around most essential and strategic installations, to prevent more escalations of violence and as a precaution for any accidents that could compromise the security in the town.
Al-Hassan says local citizens have been calling on the government to intervene and hold those responsible for inciting violence accountable in the court of law. He says the government has formed an investigative committee, but it is yet to begin its work due to the tense situation in the ground.
They agreed to provide security and social peace among different communities of Eastern Sudan, and the government was asked to bring those individuals who could have fueled the violence and bring them to justice.
Muhammad Ali, a traditional leader in the Beni Amir community, says if the government is unable to prosecute perpetrators of violence in the area, protesters will continue to express their anger. Ali says many of the protesters have lost confidence in Sudan's transitional government.
All individuals who have contributed to fuel the violence in eastern Sudan, no one has been prosecuted in the court of law. How can we call a country if we are unable to hold everyone accountable for their deeds? Everyone knows that they are behind the killing of innocent civilians.
Red Sea State Governor Abdallah Shangri lifted the curfew Sunday night, but imposed other directives in Port Sudan, Sawakin, and surrounding localities. In a televised address Sunday night, Shangri banned all forms of what he called illegal gatherings across the state. The directives also banned citizens from carrying knives, spears, or any other weapons. He says all those who violate the directives will be arrested and persecuted. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health workers are on strike in Bor. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Tried to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at healthcare workers in Bor. More than 18 employees of a local nonprofit in Bor have gone on strike over unpaid salaries. The employees closed a health center which supports an estimated 10,000 residents in Bor's Langbar neighborhood. Some patients say accessing services at Bor State Hospital is very difficult due to effects of the floods in Bor town. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Makwach Primary Healthcare Center, located about 2 kilometers north of Bor town, provides healthcare to an estimated 10,000 residents in Bor's Langbar neighborhood. People who have not been able to access services at Bor State Hospital after floods cut off some parts of Bor. 27-year-old Bor resident Michael Guy says after feeling sick for 2 days, he went to see a doctor at Makwach Primary Healthcare Center on Monday, but the center was closed. Guy says it has been a terrible day for him and other patients who sought health care at the center.
For you to come from very far to the main hospital and maybe your sickness is that heavy, so it will be quite challenging for you to reach the main hospital. So it is really very sad. You can see some people that are using even canoe. They were banned by the government by then. So it become hard for the sick person to reach the main hospital.
Guy says if Makwach Primary Healthcare Center remains closed, it will make it much harder for most Bor residents to access healthcare services. Tongbor Mamere Pemesis at Makwach Primary Healthcare Center says there is a reason he and his colleagues walked off the job on Monday.
We are angry because we have been working for almost 5 months without salaries. That is why we help to work off the jobs to protest so that our salaries are paid. We have locked the offices and they will remain closed until we get clear information about our salaries.
David Pandek, a clinical officer at the Makwach PHCC, says he too put down his tools to demand his salary in arrears be paid. Pandek says he has been serving patients for several months without getting paid, but today's tough conditions forced him to take action.
Every day that goes by, they keep telling us that money will come tomorrow. We're chartering the plane from Juba. We're following our papers, documentation on how we can transport the money from Juba to Jonglei State. That has been it. Nothing concrete has come out of it. Well, it's challenging. First of all, at this state of the community, we're having a natural disaster right now. Flood is a very big issue that has displaced people, and I'm pretty sure it has reached very many people in the world.
Pandek says he endured working without pay because many people need health services at a time when many are affected by floods. The workers at Makwach Primary Healthcare Center were contracted by the Health Support Organization with funding from the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, to provide healthcare services to Bor residents. Richard Loguma, the UN OCHA National Field Officer in Bor, says he is aware of the strike and will communicate the workers' concerns to Juba.
I've raised the case to the Minister of Health, and they have shared with us too. The only thing, because those things are done in Juba. My only way is just communicate to colleagues. They are going to follow up with them.
Clinical officers and nurses at the health facility receive between $200 and $500 a month when they are paid. Ask why workers at Makwach PHCC have not been paid for a month. Abraham Kohn, coordinator at the Health Support Organization in Jonglei State, said it's an administrative problem which would best be explained by the organization's executive director. Jeff Okello, the executive director at the Health Support Organization, did not answer several calls for comments on this story. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Kenya is facing a second wave of COVID-19 infections just weeks after lifting tough restrictions meant to limit the spread of the virus. Kenya's Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe on Sunday warned the country was headed to tough times after reporting more than 600 new cases and several deaths. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In late July, Wanjohi Githae, a Kenyan journalist, was at a social gathering when he hugged a friend.
In fact, it was not only me, it was a group of us who got sick and social friends.
So we realized we were in a social place, and someone came and hugged us. And that individual then told us, you know what, we've just been tested in our office, and we don't know what's happening.
Gidai became sick and was admitted to the hospital, where he was administered oxygen to help his breathing. The journalist says that after months of the coronavirus, people have forgotten all health protocols.
People have lowered their guard, and it's unfortunate. I think this is because the reason why people seem to be lowering their guard is you do not know someone who was sick. People will always tell you, this, the government is telling us, I don't know anyone who was infected. So, but the few people who had someone who is a family relation or a colleague, they are taking precautions.
Health officials raised the alarm after the country recorded hundreds of new cases in recent weeks and eased protocols meant to limit transmission. Health Minister Mutahi Kagwe said the country recorded 7 deaths on Sunday and 685 new cases of the coronavirus that causes the COVID-19 disease. He said health officials are worried.
There is no doubt that we are witnessing what our modeling team this morning were calling a case of new infections. We are heading for a second wave without doubt. We are also witnessing higher cases from prisons and other institutions across the different counties.
In recent months, Kenya pushed a nighttime curfew back to 11 p.m., allowing bars and clubs to operate, and just last week partially reopened the public schools. Omu Anzala is a virology and immunology professor at the University of Nairobi. He offered his assessment on why the country faces a second wave.
It could be a reflection of two things. There was a period of time we didn't have the testing commodities, so people saw like there was a decrease in the number of people who are positive. But then in the last two or three weeks, we got the commodities and now we are testing more. So the numbers you're seeing could actually be a reflection of enhanced testing. But at the same time, looking at the data critically, there's been an increase in the seropositivity of COVID cases, and we are now seeing COVID cases in all the counties.
Anzala, who also advises the government in combating the coronavirus, says it will be difficult to lock down the country again, but adds targeted lockdowns may be the answer.
What we will be looking at is individual places, rather than saying that we go back to restriction movement entire the country. We will be looking at individual sites, and where we find a spike, that maybe our concentration will be there. What do we do to limit the spread of infection from that nidus?
Since March, Kenya has recorded more than 44,800 cases and 832 deaths. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Still on COVID, there is still a lot we don't know about COVID-19, but scientists and medical experts are learning more as the pandemic continues to spread. Dr. Rajesh Gandhi, infectious disease physician at Harvard Medical School and a member of the National Institute of Health COVID Treatment Guidelines Panel, speaks to International Edition Lori Lodin with the latest on what we know about the infection and reinfection.
I think what the CDC has generally recommended is that the people at greatest risk are people who are exposed for more than 15 minutes and within 6 feet of a person without a mask. And so there's gradations of risk, and that's what the CDC feels like the risk is the greatest.
What if people have already tested negative? Should they just forget that rule, or should they continue to be very careful for a couple of weeks?
It's an excellent question. A single negative test, depending on when it's taken, doesn't necessarily rule out that someone will turn positive later. So a lot depends on when the test is taken and when the last exposure is and how close the exposure is. So that's a fair point to say that if you're tested very, very early, let's say a day or so after exposure, you may not yet have built up a viral level high enough for the test to turn positive. So repeat testing for close exposures, people who have been, you know, within 6 feet without a mask for 15 minutes or more, is definitely advisable. That kind of serial testing really is important.
Do we know enough about this virus to know that even someone who may get sick from it, even very sick, and then recovers, at what point they're no longer able to spread it? The spread of, do we have that kind of information?
You know, we now do have that kind of information. We didn't early on. Back in February and March, there was a lot of question about this, but over time, as contact tracing and more knowledge have been acquired, we have a good answer to that, which is that for almost everyone with COVID-19, that if within about 10 days of their symptom onset, the beginning of the symptoms, if their symptoms are decreasing and they no longer have a fever, they're no longer infectious. So when the CDC talks about people who've had an infection, they say that isolation can be lifted when it's been 10 days since the beginning of the symptoms and when the symptoms have started to improve. They also add that you should have no fever and you shouldn't be taking any fever-reducing medicines for at least a day. So that's information that back in February and March we were all wondering, but I'm quite confident that the data is quite strong for that kind of recommendation.
And what about if you've had it once and recovered? Do we know yet if it is possible that you can still get it again?
Excellent question. In recent weeks, not months, but weeks, we started to hear cases of reinfection. The first of these cases was reported out of Hong Kong. The way you know if someone is reinfected is you have to have a sample from the first infection and a sample from the second infection. You need to compare them to make sure that they're genetically different, that the sequence is different. That's the only way you can be absolutely sure that the virus the second time around is different than the first time around. And that's really the definition of a reinfection. Since that first report out of Hong Kong, there have been several other reports of reinfection, so we know that it can happen. There's been tens of millions of people who've had COVID-19, so we believe reinfection is uncommon, but we're literally learning more on an everyday basis. That is, every day we learn more than we did the day before about reinfection. So it can happen. I don't believe it's very frequent. And as to why some people can get it again and most people seem to not get it again, I think we still need to figure that out. People are trying to figure out if there's differences in immunity or something else about the viral inoculum or how much virus you're exposed to. So stay tuned. That's something the scientific community is very much focused on trying to answer.
VOA always delivers your favorite programs, news, music, entertainment, and sports shows. Starting Monday, October 5th, our flagship news show, South Sudan in Focus, will be moving to 16:30 UTC, followed by your favorite sports show, The Sunny Side of Sports, at 1700 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Before we end the show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Gok Marek.
Gibbs and Bimbleon.
Gong Marek, you are big and welcome. Gong Marek, you are not casual. Gong Marek, you are big and welcome. Gong Marek, you are not casual. Gong Marek, you are big and welcome. Gong Marek, you are not casual. And I may have joined the Latin in the Gog State. Burina, wow. Gong Pim, Jabang Machulaji. And I may have joined the Latin in the Gog State. Burina, wow.
Gong Marigok, you won't want Oh yeah, walk your own Pandane kaki by pirin jalitan kutan Piyangkushyan Gok panarol churin kuk Gok churin kurin yashyang Kuput ku loyalaji By panda pachi berkuraj Patiung didit yang edier Jog mayar kuwara dul By panda Achin panda sheng etong Berkuriri dor Gok adida shirian dek Undide gok churit chuk Gok churit jura baga mayuang Kutokwa jit Kuti dida purabde Pane gag dala tunga lamda mucho karo Matanga maju benda lamda mukumial Pandane gaga bugi Gaga bugi Rabi shed on ter
Gong mari chua ping dualpo Oye gong mari chua unarol kachual Gong mari chua ping dualpo Oye gong mari chua unarol kachual Tengi dar kungam la Dong pin jabang machuk lejit Ana maya chan yan latyan yan ego.
We have been listening to the song Gok Marik. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your home. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Your kula, 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 your